May it please the court, Ms. Rittman. The majority of cases in which the informant has filed information over the past several years involve trust account violations, cases in which the attorney has either intentionally, knowingly, or negligently mishandled client or third-party funds in violation of Rule 4-1.15, the safekeeping property rule. The court has applied a clear set of sanction standards in cases where an attorney has intentionally or knowingly misappropriated client funds or commingled personal funds with those of the client. Those cases often result in disbarment or suspension. A more thorny issue arises with regard to sanction analysis in those cases where the trust account violations resulted from the attorney's claimed ignorance of the rules, where there's no actual client harm that apparently resulted, and where the public can be protected by education and monitoring rather than by removal from the practice. The appropriate sanction analysis in those cases often revolve around the specific facts. This case is no different. In March 2014, informant received overdraft notifications from PNC Bank regarding a respondent's trust account. The overdrafts resulted from disbursements to a client regarding a settlement where the insurance company had stopped payment on the settlement check and had issued a second check. Respondent did not verify that the funds had been collected by the bank and were actually good funds in the trust account before dispersing those funds to the client. Informant's subsequent audit of the trust account evidenced other violations. Respondent allowed earned fees to linger in the trust account, thereby constituting commingling. He paid personal expenses from the trust account, presumably using earned fees. Specifically, he paid the Department of Revenue $708 from the trust account and paid his tax preparer $6,110. He dispersed funds from the trust account prior to the funds becoming good funds in the account. It's noteworthy that respondent previously overdrafted his trust account in June 2011. That overdraft also resulted from the fact that respondent dispersed funds to a client prior to depositing the subject check into the trust account. Informant issued a caution letter to respondent regarding the 2011 overdraft and encouraged him to attend a continuing legal education seminar regarding the proper handling of trust accounts. Respondent chose not to attend that CLE. The disciplinary hearing panel that heard this case found multiple violations of Rule 4-1.15 and recommended the respondent be publicly reprimanded. The panel specifically found that respondent required no further education or monitoring of his practice or his trust account management. Informant rejected the panel's recommendations. I checked that twice. And based on the conclusion that a reprimand for trust account violations was insufficient and that some period of education and monitoring was necessary, we rejected that panel decision and are now seeking imposition of a probationary period during which our office would be able to monitor and educate respondent regarding the proper handling of his trust account.
Is a reprimand ever appropriate for violation of trust account, or is it just this case where a reprimand is not appropriate?
Judge Draper, I think that there might be a situation where that's appropriate. In my view, if it's a reprimand case, we would likely take care of it at our office with an admonition, frankly.
A reprimand is never appropriate.
In my view, for a trust account violations and case specific, in cases where there's some sort of education or monitoring that's necessary, which I think is likely in most of these cases, we at least ought to be monitoring that practice.
If I understand you, you're not saying that you think a suspension is necessary to protect the public, but that you think you need to ask for a suspension to get probation so you can monitor, or are you asking for probation?
As I stand here today, Judge Smith, I'm asking for probation.
Okay.
In our brief, we asked for a state suspension with probation. Since that time, we argued and the court decided the Crawford case. And based on that decision, I don't think this case is even as serious as the Crawford case, frankly. But nevertheless, what I'm asking you at this point is straight probation, a period of education monitoring. To go back to your question, Judge Draper, I think that a reprimand is generally not appropriate in trust account cases. I think it's a serious violation that at least warrants some sort of monitoring by our office. That is particularly true here for two reasons. One, because we did, in issuing this caution to the respondent in 2011 suggest that he go to a CLE. He didn't have to, and he chose not to, and that's fine. But then what subsequently happens is we get a second overdraft for basically the same kind of misconduct. And then in defending against that second overdraft, the defense partially is based on ignorance of the trust account rules. That simply doesn't add up to us as a situation where you can simply reprimand that attorney. He's claiming that he did not know what commingling was, that what he was doing constituted commingling. Then I think by definition that warrants a period of education and monitoring by our office. So because of the specific facts in this case, we believe that that's appropriate. The court has held the sanction of probation is appropriate where the violation can be remedied by education and monitoring. The ABA standards similarly recommend probation when monitoring and education is necessary rather than removal from the practice of law. There are steps that the respondent has already taken to try to address these violations in this case. First of all, he took full responsibility before the panel for his actions, testified at length regarding his lack of a proper understanding as to what constituted commingling. He knew that it was improper to commingle. He believed commingling constituted the placement of personal funds into the trust account rather than placing a settlement check into the account and allowing his portion of that settlement check to linger in the account. In our view, that's a difference that's distinguishing something with really no difference. In both cases, you have your money languishing in that trust account. So he did testify.
Do you believe he now understands the rules?
Oh, I have no doubt about that, Judge Stith, that he understands at least what commingling is. Respondents paid all his outstanding obligations to clients that we have been able to identify during the audit period. He has no disciplinary history. He's practiced law for over 15 years. And as I said, he's begun to take some remedial steps and measures. He opened a new trust account based on, I believe, the recommendation of our investigator. He viewed the ethics school webinar portion of our ethics school. He attended the solo and small firm conference. And he also attended a CLE on trust accounting while these proceedings were pending and after that second overdraft. Nevertheless, to me, the protection of the public and the integrity of the bar is best served by a period of probation in this case because of the fact that not only not going to that first CLE that we suggested, but also the fact that he defended the case based on a lack of knowledge. I don't know how you simply reprimand someone like that, send them on their way, and assume that they're going to know all the other rules that have to do with the proper management of the trust account. I think that educating and verifying is the best way to protect the public and the bar in this type of case. There are aggravators and mitigators present. The panel found no aggravating circumstances. We disagree. In fact, we think there are multiple offenses present in the case as an aggravator, and there is substantial experience in the practice of law. He's been licensed since, I believe, 2001. In mitigation, the respondent, as I said, has no disciplinary history. There's an absence of a dishonest or selfish motive. He's been cooperative during the process and forthright during the disciplinary proceedings. He was remorseful before the panel, and I believe truly is remorseful for the violations. And there were various character witnesses called who testified to his good character and reputation. So there are several mitigators. There are a couple of aggravators. This case really comes down to, as I said at the outset, a fact-specific set of circumstances where we believe that a reprimand generally is not appropriate in these types of cases, and specifically is not appropriate in this case where you've already claimed that you didn't know what the rules provided for and what they required of the attorney. So we think that a period of probation and monitoring is necessary and will best serve the public and the integrity of the bar. Thank you.
May it please the court. The events of this case occurred over 3.5 years ago when respondent did not comply with the trust account rule in two specific ways during two very limited time frames. In both instances, respondent's actions were not his normal practice. Respondent is an attorney who is highly respected in the legal community and considered a role model because of his professionalism. The overdrafts, or well, overdrafts that occurred in this case did not occur for the same reason as the previous one. The previous one, he thought he had deposited the check into his trust account. Like, can happen to lots of people. He had not done what he thought he had done. He just misremembered what he had done and then dispersed based on that. That's the basis for OCDC specifically finding in their letter that his error in that instance was inadvertent. Here, what happened was not inadvertent. It was haste. The case had settled in February, and 20 days later, he still had not received the settlement check, although the check had been issued on the same date that it settled. So he contacted the insurer who issued a second settlement check and stopped payment on the first one. 6 days after that happened, after they issued the second one, he receives a check in the mail. Well, naturally, he thought it was the second one getting to him. That would be a normal time frame. And so he deposited it. And in his haste, after waiting almost a month for the settlement funds to come in, he started dispersing too quickly. This was a unique situation. Most of the time, we don't, you know, somebody's not waiting a month for the settlement check after the settlement, at least not when it has been issued, and you know that. So he was too hasty, and he issued the some checks, and two of those checks wound up coming through before the actual settlement check got deposited, the one that had not been stopped. So those came through on March 19th and March 27th, and the actual check was deposited, or the good check was deposited on April 1st. So we don't have a long period of time here where things are wrong, and then ultimately the nothing was paid out on those checks because of the overdrafts.
Is it an issue as to what he paid? That he didn't withdraw the funds that were owed to him and then pay his obligations from his own account, but he wrote multiple checks to pay personal obligations.
Right, and so the overdraft is one of the two issues, and what you just mentioned, Judge Breckenridge, is the second one, the issuing the checks on his trust account for personal reasons. First of all, I want to make it very clear, there is no allowing earned funds to linger at issue in this case. OCDC has mentioned that a couple of times. It didn't occur, and it was not alleged in the information. That is not a violation in this case, partly because the funds had been recently deposited at the time he wrote checks based upon them, and partly because it's not an allegation that OCDC made. These were recently deposited settlements and earned fees that were in there, and there were reasons that they were still in there. It had not been a long period of time. So over a 19-day period in November and December of 2013, he wrote five checks on his trust account for personal expenses. All of these checks related to getting his taxes filed and paid. At that time, he was under great stress. His marriage was deteriorating and ultimately ended in divorce. He was moving offices. He had his normal workload going on. And he had just been notified that these taxes that he hadn't been able to get filed and paid because of lack of cooperation from his former partners and lack of cooperation from his soon-to-be ex-spouse, if they didn't get paid immediately, filed and paid immediately, that he was going to be suspended under the tax suspension rule.
Well, so I want to interrupt you, and I don't doubt that these mitigators may exist, but the concern I have is that you, in your brief, talk about this being a negligent act. But that's not a negligent act, and that's an intentional act. He wrote the checks out of the trust account. And can you address that?
I believe it is a negligent act under the ABA standards because he had no understanding that what he was doing was wrong. It was not his normal practice, but he did not understand that this would in any way be considered commingling or would put client funds at risk. He was in a panic mode. because of this notice of impending suspension, and he just wasn't thinking straight.
You're saying the act was intentional, but he was negligent in not researching it to find out that was commingling.
Yes, I agree.
So why didn't he just do this all the time? Why didn't he just write checks out of it? If he didn't know, then he should be. So what is why the mitigation? Why is that such an excuse then? If he didn't know, then there was nothing wrong with doing it.
Well, he didn't, but it wasn't not his normal practice. He normally followed more accounting procedures that we would have.
So he had some understanding that he shouldn't be doing this then.
I'm not sure he had an understanding that he shouldn't be doing it, but I would say he had an understanding that it was not the best way to do it. But here he was without checks for his operating account. He didn't understand that there were any other options. He's in panic mode. He's under great stress. And frankly, I mean, if we say that every time somebody does an act knowing that they're doing the act, then we might as well just throw negligence out the window because, you know, people know what they're doing when they do it. But did he heed the risks? And that's what the ABA standards talk about in terms of negligence.
You say there weren't any retained funds in the account, or that's not an issue in the case. Whose money did he use to pay his taxes?
He used his own money. What I'm saying is that it was his own money that had been recently earned. So it had not been allowed to linger, as OCDC always says it, for an inappropriate period of time. He could have, at that time, written the checks out of the trust account to his operating account for those fees. But there was no reason that he would needed to have done that any sooner. He did not violate the leaving the funds in the trust account. And again, that was not at all an allegation that was made against him by OCDC.
So why isn't this similar to the Coleman case?
Well, in Coleman, of course, Coleman did a lot of things beyond writing checks directly out of his trust account. He did things that were completely adverse to his client's interests. He was forcing the client into settlements. He didn't notify the client when he was withdrawing. He dealt with the client in a completely unfair way to the client. Those are very significant things that Mr. Coleman did in addition to writing checks directly.
But the trust account facts are pretty similar.
The trust account facts are somewhat similar, although I would say that, again, Mr. Penning knew what the best practices were, and he was normally following those better practices. He didn't realize what he was doing was wrong, but what he did was not his normal practice at all. It was because of the unique circumstances that he was facing at the time. And so the stress and the urgent situation led to his actions. He has taken remedial steps. He set up a new trust accounting system once he learned that you know, he had problems. He wanted to make sure that everything he was doing was in compliance. He got QuickBooks online. He set up Clio, very standard type of systems used in law offices. When he learned that OCDC took the position that he had compromised his trust account, he opened a new trust account so that he would have a trust account that was not compromised. He took numerous CLEs, and I think this is important in light of Mr. Pratzel's argument that he needs education. He took all of the ethics school webinars. He couldn't at that time take the live session for that year. But this is
Counselor,
all for...
in your view, is a reprimand or straight probation, which do you consider those to be a more severe punishment?
Between a reprimand and a standalone probation?
Yes.
I consider a standalone probation to be a more severe punishment because it has an ongoing element to it. And the risk of something more coming later. A reprimand has finality. But because he did all of this education prior to the hearing taking place in this case, he attended 8 hours of ethics school. He did a two-hour live webinar on trust accounting put on, I believe, by Melinda Bentley and, well, I'm not sure who else at that time. But somebody from the discipline system. He attended the solo and small firm conference, which has frequently been a requirement of probation, and he attended 6.8 hours of ethics during the solo and small firm conference. All of this before the, he got his education. He did what he needed for education. The nature of his violations are so limited and so unique, there's not a need for ongoing monitoring. He understands what he did was wrong. He understands that it should not, you know, occur again, and it will not occur again. There is little or no actual or potential injury to the clients here. That's what we've got actually under the admonition standard in the ABA standards. So certainly nothing more than a reprimand should be imposed here.
Do you understand opposing counsel's argument, Mr. Pretzel's argument, that, well, before he thought it was a unique inadvertent circumstance and he understood the rules and so he didn't take the class, and they need to monitor to make sure that that's not the situation here again, that there's not something he doesn't understand?
I understand what he's saying. I don't agree with it. Okay. I believe that when you see that they are saying what you did was inadvertent and so we're not going to discipline you, and you see that the rest of the letter looks like it's, you know, a form letter and has things in it that really don't have to do with you. There was nothing about non-refundable fees in his situation. It's nothing about not, you know, record keeping. He thought he'd done something, he misremembered, and he hadn't done it, and it resulted in an overdraft. So, you know, I don't see the nexus there. He did not really put his clients at risk by commingling. He was writing checks on the account using earned fees, recently earned fees. He did not have delinquent debts, so there's no real risk that any creditors were going to be coming after him and the trust account. And what are the standards for when somebody can come after the trust account? I mean, we keep saying that, well, this can happen. But whenever we say, like, piercing the corporate veil, there are standards for when that occurs. Is one little instance of something, does it take two, three? Does it take a whole course of action? What is the standard here to really think that the trust account is at risk? And OCDC was not able to establish anything along those lines other than just, well, it is at risk. We have many mitigating factors here. No prior discipline. The cautionary letter should not be considered by this court, and the recommendation should not be considered by this court. It is not discipline. We don't have a selfish or dishonest motive. He used his own fees, and he's trying to disperse funds that should have been dispersed, you know, almost a month earlier. So in his haste, he makes a mistake there. Personal problems. He had a marriage going sour. He's changing offices. He's got, because of other people not cooperating with him, he's got an impending potential suspension due to tax filings not having been done. He had cooperated in the proceeding. He had excellent character and reputation witnesses that talked about what a pleasure he is to work with, even as an adversary. He, as the panel said, he openly expressed to the panel his substantial remorse. In the past, this court has issued a reprimand with requirement in cases involving more than this, where it was a regular ongoing practice for an attorney to do something wrong with their trust account. That is not the case here, so just a reprimand would be appropriate.
What are those cases where we've issued a reprimand with requirement?
They are cited in my brief. Sheff and Martin are the two cases where that has occurred. The testimony established that respondent is a good attorney with a reputation described as phenomenal and sterling. He goes above and beyond for his clients. He would harm himself before he would harm anyone else. He negligently failed to comply with the trust account rule in two unique and isolated circumstances. In light of this court's prior decisions and the ABA standards, especially the mitigating factors, the appropriate discipline actually would be an admonition, but certainly no more than a reprimand. Thank you.
Ms. Rittman claims that there was no client's money put at risk. Note that one of the payments made was to the Department of Revenue for taxes from 2007, 2008, 2009. That's not sending up red flags to someone who has the authority to dip into that trust account. Oh, the attorney has his money in that trust account, then what else would be? He does have debts. He does have tax issues. And to make that payment out of the trust account did put client money at risk. Ms. Rittman says, all these actions were done in panic mode under stress, and it's stress that led to the actions. All the more reason to monitor the conduct in this case. This is everything that was said during this argument, to me, supports and bolsters the need to monitor. Yes, he's gone through various educational steps to bring himself up to standards on what is required on the trust account, but are we going to trust that this isn't going to happen again? It's happened twice before. I say, yes, it's very good that he's taken these steps. Most of the probationary terms that we would like to impose have to do with monitoring those steps and making sure that that trust account is being handled
properly.
What kind
of what's the difference between a reprimand with requirements and probation?
Issue of monitoring, Judge Stiff. You can issue a reprimand with requirements. They're only going to be educational. 5.225 specifically says that a reprimand is appropriate in a case where monitoring is not necessary. If you get to the point where you think monitoring is necessary, then probation becomes the default sanction in these cases. I agree with counsel that I believe probation is more severe than reprimand, but it's still, given all of the facts in this case, the appropriate remedy. When you come to the table before the disciplinary hearing panel and claim, I didn't know what commingling was. I knew it was wrong, I just didn't have a correct understanding of it. Are you going to trust that there are going to be other trust account issues that he knows about? If you have that trust, fine. In my view, we ought to be monitoring that trust account for a period of time.
How long has passed since this conduct?
The overdrafts were in 2014, I believe. First one was in 2011, June. Second one was in 2014.
So it was 3.5 years.
3.5 years under the cloud of disciplinary sanctions in which he sought to educate himself. That's correct.
And do you know, did OCDC have access to any his account during that time period to know that whether it was in proper form for that 3.5 years?
Not once we completed the audit, Judge Breckenridge, went to hearing. No, we would not have had any opportunity or reason to check that trust account. We brought charges, by the way, in the 8 seconds I have left. If you read paragraphs 13, A, B, and C of our information, amended information, we allege that he allowed earned fees to linger in the account. The violation that flows from lingering is the commingling. And the fact that you allow your funds to be in the account and pay personal expenses from that, by definition, in my view, is allowing those funds to linger.
Counsel, before you sit down, this is the second case in 2 weeks where it's been 3 years between when you first issued something. This was 2014, this is 2017. Why has it taken so long to get here and to get to this point? From issuing permitted copies of records of a trust account in May 2014, and now we're here in September 2017.
I think it's generally just the investigative process and the DHP process, Judge. That there isn't anything unusual that happened in this case, frankly. I can't say that anything out of the ordinary occurred that delayed the proceedings here to make it a three-year process. I understand that that's a lengthy period of time and then allows this period where it's unknown what happened during that period. But I'm not aware of anything out of the ordinary that occurred, frankly, that delayed these proceedings.
Were the funds that you said lingered in the account more than 30 days?
I believe that they were right around the 30-day period that they were in the account. And I guess the point is the rule requires that you promptly, once those become good funds, move them into your operating account, pay from there. In my view, first of all, we allege lingering, and secondly, I think by definition that's commingling, and you've allowed those funds to linger by...
But what he's saying is if he had had another account and issued a check from his trust account to his operating account at that time, that wouldn't have been a violation. You didn't allege it was a violation. You allege it was the fact that he didn't take the intermediate step.
Well, the violation from the lingering is that he commingled. If he had moved that into the operating account and then paid from there, there's no violation.
Right.
I think I'm asking because I thought I had heard educational programs where if someone sweeps their account every 30 days, it's not considered lingering. Are you now saying that they have to do it more often than 30 days?
I mean, in my view, you have to move those funds promptly, is what the rule says.
But not so soon that they have it cleared.
I think 30 days is pushing the envelope on allowing funds to remain in the trust account beyond just the amount to pay bank charges.
Thank you.
Thank you.